Good evening. A white cop is convicted of killing a black man in Alabama. What's Trump's server obsession? And students take to the field during the Harvard-Yale football game to bring attention to climate change. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Saturday, November 23rd, 2019. A jury in Alabama has found Montgomery resident Aaron Cody Smith, a white police officer, guilty of manslaughter in the shooting death of an unarmed black man, Gregory Gunn, 58, who was killed as he was walking home late at night in 2016. The victim's brother, Franklin Gunn, says justice has been done.
I believe we have seen the best of Alabama today, and one bad apple in a bunch has been weeded out.
Smith had been charged with murder, but on Friday, after a three-day trial and 2 hours of deliberation, jurors returned with a unanimous verdict on a lesser charge. The trial had been moved to nearby Dell County, among the most conservative in the state, but the jury, made up of mostly white people, took only 2 hours to deliberate. Montgomery County District Attorney Darrell Bailey says a bad apple was weeded out by the police force.
Once this jury heard the evidence in this case, they came to the right conclusion. But what tarnishes police officers is when you have a bad apple, such as this defendant, who gave so many inconsistent statements, so many different statements about what happened that night. Victim had a hat in his hand at the time of his death, and he was clinching to that hat. Impossible to do the things that this defendant said he did.
Smith testified in his own defense. He claimed he was afraid for his life when he pulled the trigger, but prosecutors argued Gunn was never really a threat to the officer, who they called a bully with a badge. Smith's attorney, Mickey McDermott, says the DA spun a conspiracy theory and his client plans to ask for bond to be freed while appealing the verdict.
We were going to look at the conspiracy theory that the district attorney has made, that a group of Montgomery police officers conspired to alter the crime scene and basically aid and abet in a homicide.
Smith immediately resigned after the verdict was delivered. And today in New Haven, Connecticut, a Yale-Harvard football game was disrupted by climate protesters storming the field during halftime to demand that the two Ivy League universities divest from fossil fuels.
A protest of some sort, and took a seat at the midfield area, and you see that authorities from both the campus and also the city of New Haven were there. And then as it started, both teams eventually went to their respective locker rooms here at the Yale Bowl. Well, when the team started off the field, that just brought more students onto the field. And as that occurred, the students began to gather and gather and gather, and here is a live look at the students that are on the field here at the Yale Bowl. An announcement has been made asking them to clear the playing surface, but as of yet, we are in a delay for the start of the second half of Harvard and Yale.
A few students holding a banner took to the field first during the 15-minute halftime, prompting players to exit. Then more and more students streamed onto the field. Soon hundreds gathered at the 50-yard line. Some students booed, but many cheered the protesters. The banner read, "Nobody wins. Yale and Harvard are complicit in climate injustice." Another sign read, "Yale and Harvard students united for climate justice." The students sat in the middle of the field and delayed the start of the second half by at least 45 minutes. Yale outscored Harvard in the end, 43-50. And the Navy SEAL at the center of a high-profile war crimes case has been ordered to appear before Navy leaders Wednesday morning and is expected to be notified that the Navy intends to oust him from the elite commando force. That's according to two Navy officials on Tuesday. The move could put the SEAL commander, Rear Admiral Colin Green, in direct conflict with President Trump, who last year cleared the sailor, Chief Petty Officer Edward Gallagher, of any judicial punishment in the war crimes case. Military leaders oppose that action, as well as Trump's pardons of two soldiers involved in other murder cases. Navy officials had planned to begin the process of taking away Chief Gallagher's Trident pin, the symbol of his membership in the SEALs, earlier this month. But as he waited outside the commander's office, Navy leaders sought clearance from the White House that never came, and no action was taken. Admiral Green now has the authorization he needs from the Navy to act against Chief Gallagher, and the formal letter notifying the chief of the action has been drafted by the admiral. On Friday, in a rambling 53-minute interview, President Trump again raised the conspiracy theory with hosts of one of his favorite programs, Fox and Friends. In his theory at the heart of Trump's defense for reaching out to the Ukrainian government to help investigate former Vice President Joe Biden, a Ukraine oligarch who invested in the California internet security firm CrowdStrike has control of what Trump calls servers containing thousands of potentially damning emails belonging to Hillary Clinton.
No, I think this goes to the highest level. I hate to say it. I think it's a disgrace. A lot of it had to do, they say, with Ukraine.
But Mr. President,
it's very interesting. It's very interesting. They have the server, right, from the DNC, Democratic National Committee.
Who has the server?
Now, the FBI went in and they told him, get out of here. You're not kidding. We're not giving it to you. They gave the server to CrowdStrike or whatever it's called, which is a company owned by a very wealthy Ukrainian. And I still want to see that server. You know, the FBI has never gotten that server. That's a big part of this whole thing. Why did they give it to a Ukrainian company?
Are you sure they did that? Are you sure they gave it to Ukraine?
Well, that's what the word is.
Mr. Sundland, in his opening statement, said that there was quid pro quo.
Yeah, well, that's total nonsense. I do want always corruption. I say that to anybody. Why should we give money to a country that's known corrupt? Don't forget, there was no due process. You can't have lawyers. We couldn't have any witnesses. Right. We want to call the whistleblower.
But the Washington, D.C. bureau chief of Mother Jones magazine, David Korn, who is covering the hearings, says the Ukraine CrowdStrike conspiracy theory is pure fantasy on the part of the president. He also says the president is unbalanced.
It's a totally made-up controversy. What he's referring to is the DNC servers, plural, that were hacked by Russian operatives from two different divisions of the Russian intelligence establishment. And that's where the emails came from and other documents that were released by WikiLeaks before the DNC convention. And when the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, was hacked, they had a report done by CrowdStrike, a California-based company that's one of the premier companies in cybersecurity, that traced the hacks to Russia. And their finding, of course, has been confirmed by the U.S. Senate Committee and also by two congressional committees, even the one that Devin Nunes headed before the Democrats took over. Russian operatives hacked the DNC, and that's, of course, the finding of Robert Mueller in his report, that it was a systemic and sweeping attack. But there, this notion developed in these very far-right, and sometimes anonymous bulletin boards and chat groups, and then it spreads to Breitbart and RT, which is Russian propaganda, that no, that's not what happened. What happened was, and it's kind of foggy here, that the Russians didn't hack, that either the DNC hacked itself to make it look like the Russians hacked them, and that the servers were never turned over to the FBI, and that somehow because the CrowdStrike company that did this for the DNC, that did the analysis of the DNC, is owned by a Russian-American who's connected to a think tank that has got some funding from a Ukrainian oligarch, that this was all a Ukrainian operation to make the Russians look bad, and the DNC somehow did this to make Trump look bad. I mean, it doesn't make sense. The truth of the matter is that the DNC turned over the mirror images of the servers. A lot of this server stuff, it's not like a piece of equipment. A lot of it is just in the cloud, and they had, I don't know, 40 or so different servers, and they turned over the mirror images of these to the FBI for the FBI's investigation of the Russian attack. The company CrowdStrike has nothing to do with Ukraine. The idea that there's a Ukrainian oligarch who owns it and now has this server and is hiding it is complete bananas. And in fact, when the transcript, the quasi-transcript of Trump's phone call with Zelensky came out in late September, and you could see him going on about CrowdStrike, Ukraine, a Ukrainian oligarch, to me, the scariest part of that transcript is not that Trump tried to muscle the Ukrainian president. You know, if you want missiles, you got to do these, you know, political investigations that benefit me. I would expect him to do that. But the fact that he actually believes this cockamamie conspiracy theory, and we have Tom Bosert, who was his first national security, first Homeland Security advisor in the White House, who has said publicly, after I think the transcript came out, that we've tried to tell Trump there's nothing to this. And yet he goes on to, even yesterday, during his 53-minute-long rant on Fox and Friends, and if anybody else had done that, you would have had an intervention. But part of that rant, he goes on again about the server, Ukraine, and it's all word salad, but they have the servers, the DNC servers in Ukraine, and even one of the Fox and Friends people, anchors, who basically state TV, said, well, are you sure? I mean, this is like, and Fox News, that is like tremendous pushback to Trump. Are you sure? And Trump goes, well, that's the word. What? I mean, this guy's, I'm going to stop myself.
That's great.
This guy is president of the United States of America, and he believes some of the most, you know, crazy things. Even when his advisors tell him you're wrong, he says, well, that's the word, and he uses this to try to leverage his relationship with Ukraine, which is in a war with Russia. I mean, the level of nuttery here is so high that I think it's actually hard for the public to absorb it. I think it's hard for Adam Schiff and the Democrats to convey this while you have the Republicans saying things that basically reinforce the whole notion of some sort of Ukrainian conspiracy. And it's like there's a guy at the table who really is nutso, and everybody is too, you know, polite to say that.
And Korn adds at the hearing show, for all that, there was a quid pro quo.
The hearings show beyond a doubt what everyone who pays attention to facts knew, that Donald Trump used his office, used $400 million in aid to Ukraine, used the promise of an Oval Office visit and a phone call with him to lean on the Ukrainian president, the newly elected Ukrainian president, to provide political dirt across several different subject areas, to basically tarnish or taint Joe Biden if he should run for president, to make it seem as if Ukraine meddled in the 2016 election, not the Russians, and to basically, you know, come up with information that somehow supports a crazy, crazy, crazy conspiracy theory that Russia did not hack the DNC, and the DNC hacked itself, or that the Ukrainians hacked the DNC and the server was taken, which doesn't make any sense because the server exists more in the cloud. Anyway, that basically says that Donald Trump was not elected because of the Russians. And it's just quite clear this is what happened. It was a quid pro quo. You can call it extortion or bribery. These are overlapping terms. They're not distinct from each other. But what we just saw this past week is that we can't debate nationally what this means, the significance of this, because Donald Trump and the Republicans are basically arguing reality. They're saying that this fact pattern doesn't exist. To the extent that after one of the hearings, I asked Jim Jordan, I was in the room, I was covering the hearings, the Republican, you know, representative who was probably the biggest, you know, I don't know, bulldog for Trump. You know, I said, so you still think there was no quid pro quo? after Gordon Sondland had said there was, and others indicated there was. And he looked at me and said, no quid pro quo. So that's like saying, oh, I'm looking at the sky, and it's purple. And so we have a political crisis in front of us about what the meaning of reality is. And that is going to continue as the Democrats try to figure out what to do next.
And that's David Korn, the Washington bureau chief of Mother Jones magazine. This week, Swedish prosecutors dropped an investigation into sexual assault allegations against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. That stems from a 2010 case where Assange was alleged that caused Assange to take refuge inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London for over 7 years to avoid extradition to Sweden. British authorities dragged him out of the Ecuadorian embassy in April, and he has since been jailed in London's Belmarsh prison on charges related to skipping a bail in 2012. And actually now he's being held because the United States has charged him with numerous counts of espionage, although he's not a United States citizen. And next year that'll be that case will be decided. We have joining us live on the line Howie Hawkins, a Greens Party activist here in New York State, former governor, candidate for governor of New York, I believe. Welcome to WBAI.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great. So you've been very concerned about the Assange case. Can you tell us, bring us up to date with what's happening?
Well, I put out my fourth statement about this. I'm a candidate for the Green nomination for president now, and this case is really important because it affects freedom of the press, not just in this country, but around the world, because he's not a U.S. citizen and his organization is not U.S.-based. And he's being charged under the Espionage Act, which doesn't allow for a public interest defense for whistleblowers, which makes it a show trial. And the fact that Sweden this week, for the third time, dropped the investigation into alleged sexual assault by Assange, by some that some women complained about quite a while ago in Sweden, to me shows it is a political show trial because Sweden is no longer needed to keep him in the UK for extradition to the United States. So that was what prompted my fourth statement on this. But this is an attack on the freedom of the press. The press depends on leaks from the government to tell us what the government's up to. They do it every day. And to go after Assange and imprison him for that puts the whole, all journalists and editors and publishers at risk.
I see. And what, as you're running for president, that's we're announcing that. I don't know if it's been announced yet on WBAI. Thanks for that opportunity to break that news. So, Howie Hawkins, why are you running for president? What would you do that's so different from the current president?
Well, just about everything. Yeah, I announced back in May, and I've been running around the country talking to Greens to get delegates for the convention next summer and to get us on a ballot line. I mean, one issue is this country has a big problem of voter suppression, and part of that is party suppression. And we got that going on in New York right now, where the Democratic Party, the headline in the New York Times a couple weeks ago was the Democrats' secret plan to kill third parties. They're going to raise by five times the number of votes you need to get a ballot line in New York. And you want to get on the ballot to run for Congress. New York takes 3,500 signatures. Illinois, over 15,000 signatures. You want to run for Parliament. In New Zealand, it's 2 signatures. In India or the United Kingdom, it's 10 signatures. So they don't suppress candidates or parties. So that's one among many issues. And, of course, people say, well, aren't you going to split the center-left vote and help Trump get reelected? The answer to that is a national popular vote with ranked choice voting, which we've been telling the Democrats about since the Nader campaign. And instead of working with us to get rid of the Electoral College and replace it with a national popular vote and ranked choice voting, they pick on the Greens as spoilers, which is not a solution. There's the climate emergency, the inequality crisis, and inequality kills. We now have a 20-year life expectancy gap between our richest and poorest counties. And then we have a new nuclear arms race that is not even being talked about by the major party candidates. So I'm running on those issues. I'm running mainly because Greens asked me to, and so those are the things we're trying to get into the debate.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned that sometimes the Greens and other third-party candidates come under greater attack by people you would think would be on the progressive side, mainly the Democratic Party and people supporting Democratic candidates, and they use this term spoiler. They often go back to 2001, saying 2000, the election there between Gore and Bush was ruined by Ralph Nader running. What do you say to those charges?
Well, the Supreme Court ruined the election in 2000. They stopped the count. And when the media went back and counted all the votes in Florida, Gore won Florida. So, you know, the Greens become like an excuse for the Democrats when they lose an election. The last two Republicans were first elected when they lost the popular vote, George W. Bush and Donald Trump. And they pick on us instead of the system that created that result, which is the Electoral College. So, you know, the Greens don't spoil elections. We improve elections because we bring issues that aren't being debated, that need to be debated. And in fact, you know, in my congressional district, the only time the Democrat has won in the last 50 years is when a Green ran, because we bring up issues. The Democrats sounds better because they're addressing those issues than they do when they're just running against a right-wing Republican. And they try to, you know, move as far to the right as they can to get those votes in the middle. And then they lose their base, the enthusiasm. So I don't accept that we spoil elections.
Are you going to be in the debates? Do you think you'll be able to get into any of these debates when the elections get going? I'd love to see you and Trump and whoever it is, Buttigieg or whoever.
Oh, yeah, so would I. But there's this Commission on Presidential Debates, which sounds like a government agency. In fact, it's a private corporation owned by the Democrats and Republicans. And they set that up after Perot got in those debates in the early 90s and muscled out the League of Women Voters. And they have criteria that makes it, you really have to be a major party before you even get in. And the Greens aren't there yet.
I see.
So what we're hoping, though, is that the League of Women Voters and news organizations and civic organizations organize a debate just independent of the Commission on Presidential Debates. And there's enough prestige in those organizations to get everybody to come. The League of Women Voters tried that in our gubernatorial race in 2018. They pulled it off. Everybody showed up but Governor Cuomo. So, you know, I think it's up to them to try to open up the debates. That's my best shot.
All right, President Trump, I don't think he will miss the opportunity. Thank you very much, Howie Hawkins, for joining us on the WBAI News.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Howie Hawkins is Green Party candidate for president. And finally, police arrested at least 58 demonstrators who flooded the streets of Upper Manhattan to protest a fare evasion crackdown and police in the subway on Friday night. Organizers said the crowd swelled to about 200 people soon after the protest kicked off at 5:30 p.m. in Harlem. The demonstration was called to protest Governor Cuomo's plan to add 500 police officers to patrol the subway and several high-profile caught-on-video arrests in the subway system in recent weeks. The group coordinating the event was Decolonize This Place. Spokesperson Mars says the action was part of a series of protests against the criminalization of people of color.
First emergency action was called on November 1st, and that's when a mass fare evasion took place, where hundreds of people from the larger march broke off and entered the Hoyt Schermerhorn stop in Brooklyn. Last night in Harlem, as a collective, did not get to go into the subways. Due to the fact that the NYPD had actually closed the subway stations in Harlem. So, for example, if you were on the 2-3 train, you could not get off at 125th Street during the time of the march. So we actually didn't go down there. However, looking at photos and videos afterwards, that a few anarchists actually did get down there. There was a turnstile that was cut in the Bronx, I believe, such that people could walk through the turnstile without paying. There were emergency exits that were chained open so that people could freely walk into the system. So those were different things that were happening in the subways. But for the most part, about 2,000 people, give or take, assembled in Harlem last night to go on a march, to take the streets, and to fight the presence of the police and the MTA. And then at some point, the march is split into different sections where a large group of people, about 750 people plus, ended up in the Bronx. They marched all the way to 149th Street to Horizons to make the connections there between police and the MTA and then prisons and jails.
What is Horizons, you said?
Horizons, I believe, is a jail. It's a juvenile detention center up in Harlem.
And what did folks do when they got there?
That was the end destination. So when they got there, they had a small speak out where they were making the connections. So a lot of this is coming after the city vote to build four new jails in the boroughs, and the four boroughs minus Staten Island, right? For the past year plus, groups such as No New Jails NYC have been organizing to stop the building of new jails, trying to push forth an abolitionist framework.
What's the connection between the subway action, which is apparently to open up the subways for free use, and going to the prison to protest and call for no new jails?
Well, the thing about the subway is that, I mean, one thing is definitely free transit. Is that our demand is that we want the NYPD out of the MTA. We also want the end of harassment of the vendors that sell things within the MTA, and not one demand less. So when you look at the increase of policing, right, so the city just assigned 500 new police officers to the subway stations, and they're considering assigning 500 more. Where exactly are these police officers being deployed? We know which neighborhoods they're going to, right? When you look at the viral video of Adrian Napier, a 19-year-old black male who was essentially had about 8 to 12 cops point their gun at him through the subway train station, he was at the Franklin Avenue stop in Crown Heights. When you look at the viral video of the officer punching 15-year-old black children in the face, that also happened in Brooklyn. J Street Metro Tech. And you just start to see where they're really starting to deploy these cops and in what neighborhoods and towards who. There's a pattern that emerges. And so when you think of police officers and policing, naturally one also thinks of prison, and that also resulting in an increase of a different type of policing, but very similar. So actually our coalition, right, because this action was put together by many different groups from Decolonize This Place, which I'm a representative of, but also Y Accountability, Take Back the Bronx, a bunch of different groups, South Asian Solidarity Initiative, a bunch of different groups over the city. And we all have this, find ourselves located in the struggle, right? Whether it's thinking through policing and prisons, whether it's thinking through the increase of police due to gentrification, right? So like Crown Heights is being heavily gentrified right now. So, of course, with that comes an increase of police presence at the Franklin Avenue station, such that 8 to 12 cops can then tackle a 19-year-old kid to the ground.
What's next for you guys?
What's important is that last night we survived the police riots and kidnappings, and that we won't stop, we're not afraid, and that this movement only grows in numbers. From here, we're going to regroup, re-strategize, figure out what our next move is, but what's important to note is that we are in a moment of rupture in this current political climate. And it's nothing new, right? Police presence is nothing new for black and brown and low-income communities. It's more visible now for other people to see.
Mars is a spokesperson for the activist group Decolonize This Place. And that's some of the news for Saturday, November 23rd, 2019. The news was engineered by James Irsay. From the studios of listener-sponsored, locally produced, and independent WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
Coming up incredibly soon, On Contact with Chris Hedges, over WBAI.